Neither of them.
Neither of them.
Is that right? That's right. You are correct.
Limited in our.
Are you ready, Carla? Good morning and welcome to the Portland City Council meeting. I will ask Carla to call the roll. We have a limited quorum today.
Fish, Saltzman, Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Welcome, everyone. We have some wonderful celebrations up front in today's council meeting before we begin with communications and the regular business of the council. First, we as a community today will be spending some time celebrating because at the national level we have wonderful news, and here at the local level we have some great news and a great partnership to celebrate today. First, at the national level, many of you may have heard that the United States Supreme Court ruled this morning to overturn a particularly odious piece of legislation passed in 1996 called the Defense of Marriage Act. DOMA stated very clearly that some Americans may marry the ones that they love and other Americans may not. In 1996, no state permitted gay or lesbian Americans to marry. In 2013, 12 states and the District of Columbia authorized same-sex marriage. Oregon is not yet one of them. In 2014, we can dare to hope that we will change that as a state. Let me read you just some of the language of this opinion that came out this morning, written by Justice Anthony Kennedy for the majority. DOMA writes inequality into the United States Code. DOMA's principal effect is to identify a subset of state-sanctioned marriages and make them unequal. The principal purpose is to impose inequality. By creating two contradictory marriage regimes within the same state, DOMA forces same-sex couples to live as married for the purposes of state law, but unmarried for the purpose of federal law, thus diminishing the stability and predictability of basic personal relations the state has found proper to acknowledge and protect. By this dynamic, DOMA undermines both the public and private significance of state-sanctioned same-sex marriages, for it tells those couples and all the world that their otherwise valid marriages are unworthy of federal recognition. The late Congresswoman Geraldine Ferraro once said, "We have chosen the path to equality. Don't let us turn around." Today's ruling clears the way for all states, including Oregon, to be that pathfinder and to find our way towards marriage equality for every Oregonian. We have cause to celebrate the cause of justice. Thank you, United States Supreme Court. A great day.
Mr. Mayor, I would just like to give a shout out to United States Senator Ron Wyden, who is one of 14, count them, 14 senators to vote against DOMA in 1996.
Yeah, good for him. You're here. Our next celebration this morning is a local one, and I want to invite Mr. Huo Baozhu and Charmé to come translate for Mr. Huo. And introduce him to maybe some of those who are here today. He's well known to some of us who've been involved in civic life for a while. Oh, please, right up here. Thank you, Huo Baozhu. And I have a proclamation to read, and I'll read it slowly enough that Charmé will have the opportunity to translate for Huo Baozhu and anyone else that requires that translation while we proceed. So just let me know when you're ready. Whereas City of Portland elected officials, staff, citizens, and visitors appreciate art in all aspects and tone.
波特兰的官员, 还有工作人员, 以及, 市民, 都非常欣赏各类的艺术。
Whereas Mr. Huo Baozhu believes that the answer to achieving world peace is through cultural connections.
霍宝旭先生认为世界的和平可以通过文化的连接来实现。
Whereas Mr. Huo Baozhu is a Chinese businessman whose foundry in Xi'an, China, is licensed by the national government to reproduce Chinese antiquities.
霍宝旭先生是一位中国商人, 他在西安的这个铸造厂是中国政府授权可以复制中国文物的唯一一家企业。
Whereas Mr. Huo Baozhu visited Portland many times and was motivated by his love of Chinese history and his admiration for Portland.
霍先生曾多次到访过波特兰，那他对波特兰非常的喜爱，而且他对这个中国历史的热爱一直激励着他。
Whereas in October 2002, Mr. Huo Baozhu gave the city of Portland the majestic Datang, or Universal Peace, Shang Dynasty bronze elephants in the North Park blocks.
2002年10月, 霍先生在波特兰的公园路北区向波特兰赠予了商代的青铜大象大同，象征着世界和平。
Whereas the elephant has symbols of ancient Chinese mythology and carries a baby elephant, symbolizing that offspring will be safe and prosperous.
这个大象具有很多中国古典神话的象征意义，而且它背上的这个小象象征着子孙后代的兴盛还有平安。
Whereas Mr. Huo Baozhu's gift brings great distinction, harmony, and pleasure to our many visitors to the North Park blocks.
霍先生的这个礼物 给去公园路北区到访的游客带来了非同寻常的感受，也给他们带来了和谐以及喜悦。
Whereas the relationship between the city of Portland and Mr. Huo Baozhu continues to strengthen and ripen, and the city welcomes his visits at any time and celebrates his continued good health.
波特兰市和霍宝柱先生之间的这个关系是日渐的成熟，我们也希望他能够随时到访波特兰。
Now, therefore, I, Charlie Hales, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim June 26, 2013, to be a day of recognition for Huo Baozhu and encourage all residents of Portland to observe this day.
特此，我查理·海尔斯，俄勒冈州波特兰市及玫瑰之城的市长。 宣布2013年6月26日为波特兰的霍宝柱日，我也鼓励全体市民庆祝这一天。It's
an amazing story of friendship and generosity, and Mr. Huo is here in Portland for one of his two rare visits. We hope he comes more often.
我们也是想再次感谢霍先生的这个慷慨大方，那他这次到访波特兰，也是他 最近到访波特兰的这个行程之一，我们希望他来的太少了，我们希望他今后可以经常来。So
it gives me great pleasure to introduce him to the council and to the Portland community of 2013 and look forward to this friendship continuing for many years.
我也非常荣幸能把霍先生介绍给我们市议会的成员以及波特兰的民众，希望我们的友谢谢。
Huo Baozhu, 谢谢, thank you.
谢谢。
Thank you.
谢谢。
非常感谢波特兰州市议会和各位民众。First
of all, I would love to give my thanks to the City of Portland as well as the Council and all the citizens of Portland.
从98年我第一次到波特兰之后，波特兰的环境和艺术深深地吸引了我。
I came to Portland for the first time in 1998. By then, I was already attracted by the beautiful environment and the art of the city.
我是一个做中国传统雕塑和艺术的一个人。
I am a businessman who specializes in traditional Chinese artworks.
我感觉波特兰是一个在美国是一个历史悠久、文化丰富的一个城市。
I feel that Portland has very distinct art and culture atmosphere.
同时我也得了癌症，在那个时间我同时得了癌症。Back
then, I had cancer.
得到了美国友好的治疗。And
I got very good care from American people.
使我的生命再次获得了新生。
And later, my cancer was cured because of the treatment I got here in the United States.
在我获得美国帮助治疗期间，我深深感到美国人的博大和慈爱。
During the period, I was getting all kinds of help from American people. I deeply felt that American people are so friendly and caring.
当时我是48岁。
Back then, I was 48.
在我48岁那一年得到美国的救治，我为了答谢美国人民对我的第二次生命给予的帮助。
Back then, I was 48, and because I was cured here in the United States, I always wanted to seek opportunities to return and to give my thanks for giving me the second life.
我自己下立愿给美国赠送48个不同的雕塑。
So I determined I would donate 48 sculptures to the United States.
当我爱上波特兰之后，我就想把最美的雕塑送给波特兰。
Then I fell in love with Portland, so I decided I would donate the most beautiful one to Portland.
后来，查理到我们西安到访之后，我对他的善良，对他对波特兰的热爱。和对波特兰工作的严谨，我决定给他们再送更多的雕塑。
Later, I started to know Charlie because he came to Xi'an to visit us. I was so moved by his kindness, his love for Portland, and his spirit of hardworking. So I decided when I can, I would donate more to Portland.
后来我就给自然疗法大学亚斯托利亚。送了雕塑。
That's why later I donated different sculptures to the Oriental Medical School and to Astoria.
这次我来了之后，我没想到市政厅前面有一些市民前面门厅前面有一些穷苦人是吧？有一些穷苦人需要政府的帮助。
This time when I came here, I noticed that there are some poor people protesting in front of the city hall, and I believe they need some help.
所以说我呢，决定呢，再拿出来5个和大同基本大小一样尺寸的5个雕塑。
I would love to donate 5 more sculptures as big as Da Tong.The elephant.
如果能够在波特兰通过公共艺术的拍卖，把所得的钱由政府支配去安排。
If possible, I would love the city government to use those 5 sculptures do some auction, and the money you make can be used to help the poor.
或者送给城市的。由这个波特兰大家决定放给这个城市的任何一个地方。
Or the city and its citizens can make the decision where the money should be used.
让这个城市更加美丽。
I just want to contribute to make the city more beautiful.
今天我是获得了波特兰市的荣誉市民。
Today, it is my great honor to be recognized by the city of Portland.
我应该为这个城市做我自己应该做的事情。
And of course, in the future, I will be more motivated to contribute more to the city of Portland.
我是一个做艺术品的。
I am an artist.
只能用艺术来回报波特兰。
So my contribution is art.
谢谢。
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
对不起，我加一句话。我对不起，我加一句话。
I wanted to add one more sentence.
当我第一次说给这个城市送雕塑的时候，那个翁，那个前任那个助理，他不相信。
I still remember the first time when I said I would donate a sculpture to Portland. Ron, back then, he didn't believe me.
后来我说，我承担你们的全部费用到中国去看。
And I suggested I would invite all of you guys to Xi'an, so you would believe me.
我市长带了六个审查人员到那儿去审查我。
So Charlie finally took six altogether to Xi'an to test if it's true or not.
后来他看觉是真的。
And then the whole story came into the truth.
所以我现在答应给这个城市送五个雕塑仍然是真的。
So my promise to donate five more will be a true story as well.
I don't know of any other city that has a story like this of a philanthropist from thousands of miles away who's fallen in love with our city and decided to show that love with art. But I'm glad that you had a chance to meet this man, and we'll see more of him now that he's healthy and still in love with Portland. So thank you all. And now, Commissioner Fritz, I believe you have a proclamation as well.
Thank you, Mayor Harrells. It is my honor this morning to read this proclamation in recognition of Hearing Loss Awareness Week. And if I could ask Lisa Hamlin of the Hearing Loss Association of America to come forward, please. She's the Director of Public Policy. I'll read the proclamation, and then Lisa, if you could say a few words. Whereas hearing loss is a very serious condition that affects an individual's ability to effectively communicate in a society where communication is an important function. And whereas the City of Portland recognizes and values the efforts of all who work to temper the isolating effects of communication disabilities in the 1 in 5 families affected by them. And whereas the National Institute on Deafness and Other Communication Disorders at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, estimates the number of persons who have some degree, Bethesda, Maryland estimates the numbers of persons who have some degree of hearing loss to be approximately 28 million. And whereas the City of Portland is committed to removing the barriers that prevent people with disabilities from realizing their full potential and realizing their dreams. And whereas the vision of an age-friendly City of Portland addresses communication and recognizes that at age 65, 1 out of 3 Americans have hearing loss. And whereas the Portland Commission on Disability serves the community with a mission in guiding the city in ensuring that it is a more universally accessible city for all. And whereas the Hearing Loss Association of America is holding its national convention in Portland, Oregon from June 27th to the 30th, providing an extensive educational program for people with hearing loss as well as their family and professionals who work with people with hearing loss. And whereas the City of Portland welcomes our honored guests and recognizes every individual with hearing loss as a human being with the right and responsibility to participate fully in our society. Now, therefore, Charlie Hales, the mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, does hereby proclaim June 23rd through 29th, 2013, to be Hearing Loss Awareness Week in Portland, and we encourage all residents to observe this week. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. We are honored by your proclamation and thrilled to be in Portland. Already our people who have come here from all over the country are telling us how wonderful it is in their visiting areas in Portland. Hearing Loss Association of America has been around since 1979, founded by Rocky Stone, who was a former CIA agent, who found that the services for people with hearing loss are not being delivered. And so this organization, from working in his kitchen, has formed to 200 different chapters across the country, and Portland has one of those chapters. It's very lively and very active, and we want to thank you for honoring us in this way. We also want to invite everyone here and everyone in Portland to come. We will have one day for veterans where they can come on Saturday for free. We also have anybody can come to our exhibit hall for free and see all the technology that is available for people with hearing loss. So we invite you all. I hope you take the opportunity to come and see us. And if not, again, our people are just thrilled as anything I can think of to come to Portland because they all want to visit this beautiful city. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Lisa, and thank you to the Commission on Disability and Patrick Philpott in the Office of Equity and Human Rights who helped facilitate this. Thank you so much for being here. I have the proclamation for you.
Thank you. Thanks for the work you're doing. Okay, then this was a great start to a historic change in our country and some good news here in Portland. So thank you for indulging all of us in a few moments of celebration. Let's get to the business at hand and go to the first communications item, please.
Item 612, request of William Savory and Spencer Ehrman to address council regarding City Club report on air quality regulation in the metropolitan area.
Good morning and welcome. Come on up.
Thank you. May I ask my colleagues?
Yes, please. Yeah, you
can
come on.
The order of
since you're all signed up, you can just do this as a panel and keep it.
Thank you.
Okay. Holy moly.
Peter Livingston will lead off for us.
All right, Peter.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm Peter Livingston, and I was the chairman of a City Club committee formed in January 2012 to look at the subject of air toxics. There had been a fair amount of coverage of air pollution in the Portland area and concern about its effects on Portland residents. We were asked to look at the major strengths and weaknesses of the current processes to address air pollution and to make recommendations concerning what actions and strategies could improve effectiveness. There was a small committee, it was only six of us at the end, with two advisors. We interviewed over 30 witnesses from around the political spectrum, including citizen activists, state regulators, scientists, representatives from business organizations, industry representatives, and individual business owners. We looked closely at the history of air quality regulation in the nation and the state, at current regulations, and at regulations in adjoining states. We also look closely at technical materials associated with air quality. And we reached a number of conclusions which are stated in the report, which is online at the City Club website. First, air toxics are a separate category from heavily regulated smog components and are present in quantities that measurably and predictably affect human health. The sources of air toxics can be ranked in terms of their effects on the region. in order their wood stoves, vehicles, diesel engines, off-road engines, which are construction engines, lawnmowers, and point sources, which are industrial plants, facilities. After discussing the question of cost with the business owners that were particularly concerned with that issue, we concluded that appropriate regulation of air toxics is consistent with a healthy business environment, and that overall it will save money. I'll yield next to the writer of the report, Maria Eberhardt.
Okay. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Maria Eberhardt, and I was the lead writer. I had a lot of help. As the lead writer of the 70 or so pages you have in front of there, it's really hard to think of what do I want to say in 3 minutes. So I'd like to encourage you, since I'm going to leave in 2.5 minutes, to turn to page 49 in that report. And that is the meat, even though it's in the appendix, because that's the details. 49 to 52 is a table. And at the bottom of page 50, the table breaks into two pieces. And this is what Peter was just talking about. The big thing we learned that I wanted to share this morning, with one second thing I'm going to go into more detail, is that there are two kinds of pollution and they're regulated entirely differently. Air toxics begin at the bottom of page 50, and there are no ambient limits for air toxics. They are regulated, if they are created by industry or manufacturing processes, they're regulated pretty well, but very intricately with a maximum achievable control technology standard. And there are over 190, but our report was able to narrow down to 15. And so NDEQ is focused on about 15. So then the only other thing I wanted to be sure to share this morning is it's easy to be skeptical that wood stoves should lead the most important steps we should take next, because I didn't believe it myself for many months. Because it just sounds so, you know, wood stoves. Is that log cabins? Or, I mean, who's burning wood stoves? And so I just wanted to say that the evidence accumulated over many months, and we did decide to leave it in first place. The first thing is take a look at how many of the air toxics have wood burning as one of their sources, as one of their top three sources. That's the second column. The main column to focus on is the fifth one, which is how much over health-based benchmarks we are. This next thing is, it turns out 15-PA is especially toxic as air toxics go. And then we found out that there's a recent survey that probably 6,000 homes are heated by uncertified wood stoves. And so what happens in a math problem kind of way is 6,000 unfiltered, unregulated, small smokestacks do turn out to be more of a problem than a few dozen industrial or manufacturing sources that are pretty well regulated by 40 years of activity, starting with the EPA. So I hope those two kind of ahas just give you a taste of the discoveries we made in our 14 months or so. And I look forward to providing more information.
Thank you very much.
This is Susan Clable.
My name is Susan Clable. Although I grew up in the Northeast and have lived and restored historic homes in New York, Massachusetts, California, Portland, and Western Europe, I moved to Southwest Portland just below the I-5 in Fulton Park about 5 years ago, at least partly to escape air pollution, noise pollution, and the freeway traffic, which I had experienced in L.A. Joining the City Club and working on this study was one way of learning more about the community and the environment. The air quality study has really been an eye-opener. My home is about 500 feet from the Terwilliger curves, which means that it falls within the air quality danger zone of 1,500 feet, the area of the highest asthma, lung disease, and autism rates throughout the United States in terms of relationship to freeways. My move was a choice based on aesthetic values and a gorgeous view. But now, because I have become well informed, I also have a choice to relocate to a healthier neighborhood. In our study, we have learned that the majority of families who live within the danger zone of our freeways do not have this choice. Land was cleared, freeways were built, and the empty space was filled with the majority of our Portland schools and public affordable housing. This is a form of social inequity. Those people who most need to live in a healthy environment with their growing families cannot afford to live elsewhere and are spending all their time near the freeways. As a matter of fact, many real estate agents emphasize that homes for sale are near the freeway exits for convenience sake. So most citizens are in fact not informed about the daily health hazards, nor are they aware of any personal choices which could improve their situation. Some of these have been recommended in the Appendix B of our study. The choice of moving is not realistic for many people, so they are already dealing with a social inequity. But everyone can be educated to make better choices. Some of these would include driving less and using mass transit, biking, or walking. Homes need to be provided with upgraded wood stoves, and everyone can reduce the use of two-stroke garden tools in favor of getting some exercise while mowing, clipping, sweeping, etc. As a city, we need to be conscious of the fact that the toxins in our air are funneling into our valley, and eventually we all have the potential to breathe them. We hope that you will join us in lobbying the legislature for more funding for the Department of Environmental Quality.
Good morning. My name is Bill Savory. I live in the South Waterfront District, within 1,000 feet of Route 5. And I arrived today by trolley, Portland streetcar, which is my normal mode for coming downtown. Internal combustion engines account for 40 to 50% of the air toxics in the Portland metropolitan area. They constitute three of the five sources that Peter mentioned that have been determined by the DEQ. And they are cars and pickup trucks on our streets and highways, heavy highway trucks passing through, and off-road diesel-powered equipment, primarily construction equipment in the Portland metro area. Five of our recommendations, that is numbers 5 through 9, involve IC engines or internal combustion engines. What are the control methods that are in use to mitigate effects of producing air toxics by internal combustion engines, and how are they working? Well, first, the EPA requires reduced sulfur and benzene in oil refinery feeds. This is ongoing and it's ineffective, and it's something that we all benefit from. Secondly, the EPA imposes age tier emission limits on new engines. What that means is the engines that are being manufactured and sold this year and are better, are cleaner than the ones from previous years. And this is the way the federal government approaches this. It's quite effective, but it's slow because of legacy diesel engines. They persist. Diesel engines last a long time, and they're very expensive, and we're still in a recession or coming out of it. So that's had a big effect. Operating requirements imposed by state, regional, and local authorities is an effective way. Unfortunately, there's a non-uniform regionally and blocked by stakeholders. In other words, on the West Coast, the three states, Washington, Oregon, and California, have quite different requirements, and unfortunately, Oregon's are the least. How can the city help? The city can help by a number of ways. By example, upgrading equipment using less toxic fuels, passing rules and ordinances to reduce toxics from engines, financing, helping to finance and loan options for retrofits and upgrades, and participating in public education efforts. The committee believes that the city can help mitigate the toxics problem. We have some primary questions here. What is the flexibility that you have? What is your evaluation of the implementation of our 10 recommendations? And what is the legal authority in the pursuit of our 10 recommendations? We will return to hear of your progress in helping to implement our recommendations. Thank you.
Well, thank you all very much. Spencer, do you have anything to add?
Just finally, Commissioner Fritz, following this, if it's all right with you, we will follow up with you as you're overseeing the Bureau of Development Services.
Yes, I had actually, when I was in charge of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, been working with Mary Provito and the Neighbors for Clean Air on this issue. So I'm sure it's something that Mayor Hales, in charge of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and I will work together on now that I'm in charge of Development Services. Okay. And so we'll probably be convening a group sometime in August or September to, after we've gotten the city attorney's opinion on your recommendations as to our authority, which has always been the question, is it them or is it us in terms of the state or us? I believe there are things that we can do at the local level which will address some of the concerns. Thank you very much for your report.
Thank you. We believe the same thing. So we'll look forward to hearing more about that.
Thank you.
I just want to say, I think this is a classic case of the City Club, you know, using volunteers to do really important community work. And I know it's a lot of time that you invest as volunteers to do this, and it's really excellent that we have the City Club and that it does this kind of policy research for those of us that are then responsible for making public decisions. So thank you. Thanks very much. Appreciate
your
report.
Thanks for this opportunity.
Thanks. Okay, we have one more communication item, number 616, please.
Request of Roy Pasco to address council regarding houseless issues, Right to Dream 2.
Morning. Welcome. Roy.
Good morning. My name is Roy. I'm here to represent Right to Dream 2 and houseless, homeless, and those with a home. We've been there for quite a while helping people that not only are homeless or houseless, but even people that do have homes. There's been many times that people even with homes have been there to need our help for one reason or another, a place to stay for a short time. We've been there for quite a while to help the people that don't have homes, that seek shelter, that are looking for a place to get a new start, to step up. We're not there to give people handouts, but a hand up. Been many people that have come to us needing sleep, shelter, food, water, restrooms. We provide all this stuff for the houseless, homeless, and even many people that do have homes that need a place to go in the middle of the city. Because as you know, there's not a lot of places for people to go for services like this. Oftentimes, Right to Dream 2 has helped out many people with finding a place to sleep, to get jobs, to get homes. Just in the last month, we've had 5 other people who have gotten housing, who've gotten jobs, who've gone back to college, to get their lives back in shape as it once used to be and as they will want it to be again. I myself have had to use Right to Dream 2 as a service for myself when I had no place to go. Tomorrow, my wife will be in an apartment, and she's been sleeping in Right to Dream 2. Before that, we were up on Kelly Butte, living in the mountains up there. The police have shut the place down. That gives a lot of the homeless no place to go. Right to Dream 2 has been there to help people, to see to it that they have a way of getting off the streets, to be able to start their lives all over again. The thing that makes it difficult is the fact that the city has been keeps wanting to shut us down. The hardest part is the fines they keep putting on us. That makes it that much harder. We survive solely on donations and grants. There's been a lot of people that have come in and have helped us. We give tours. They give donations. There's even been people from other countries. There's been people from Canada. I talked to a young man from Africa last night. And they really enjoy the fact that we're here to help the people, the homeless, the houseless, even people with homes who sometimes need a place to stay. We had a young lady from Southwest about a month ago. She got lost from her party. She came to Right to Dream too, to be able to find the rest of her party, to find her way home. We do good for more than just the houseless and homeless. We do our best for the greater Portland community.
All right, thank you. No, we appreciate what you're doing. Thank you, and thanks for your advocacy. Thanks.
Thank you all for coming this morning.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move into the regular agenda, and the first time certain, of course, we're saving consent calendar for tomorrow when we have a majority, a supermajority. So let's move to item 617.
Accept report on the Smarter Portland Plan.
Good morning and welcome.
So my name's Herman DeHouge. I'm an innovation strategist with Intel, about 18 miles west from here. With me here is Ila Rosenwasser, who's a student in architecture, and Teresa Chesik, a student in product design. And perhaps the best way to talk about this report that you probably have sitting on your desk is to talk about how it came to be. So as I mentioned, I work for Intel. So we take essentially a technology view to the world. At the time, I was part of the Intel EcoStrategy Office, which is essentially investigating technology opportunities to improve sustainability in the world. By trading atoms for bits, there's usually a way you can save energy, you can be more efficient in the way the world operates. So when the opportunity came to teach a class at University of Oregon, the idea of essentially mixing the technology lens with one of urban planning, design, user-centered thinking, and architecture and urban planning became really part of my agenda. Too many of those conversations, I think, are dominated by people like me, technologists. We love technology. That's what we do. We invent technology. But unless we understand how that technology is going to really make life better in cities or for people, we're missing out. So the whole idea is, how do we engage architects, urban planners, product designers, creatives in those conversations? These are very, in my viewpoint, very important conversations. We all know about global warming, climate change. I believe we have to pull every lever available to us to make a difference. We believe one of those levers is the aggressive use of smart use of information technology to make a difference. So the class came to be to really explore the design innovations enabled if you study the city as one unit of study. What can you do that would make the city more livable, more equitable, more economically sustainable, and more environmentally sustainable? So we explored everything from elements of transportation, information technology used in parking, public transportation planning, citizen engagement. In fact, the previous example was a perfect, on the air quality, is a perfect example on how citizens can actually start caring. If you provide them with technology, they can actually do the measurements where they go and where they breathe the air, as opposed to where potentially they might think something might go wrong or might be in place. So this sort of led to the creation of this class. And one of our guest lecturers in the class was Joe Zender, who's the city planner of Portland. And his lecture was extremely well received. Students loved it. I loved it. And out of that lecture came essentially the idea of, how do we take the Portland plan, which I think is pretty unique in its concept, and how do we take smart city concepts and put the two together? We believe a lot of the strategies outlined in the Portland plan can be implemented effectively and aggressively if we think about how information technology can play a role in enabling them. So the big assignment for the students and the major project for them was to really think, ideate, brainstorm around how smart city concepts could provide recommendations to the Portland plan, and in doing so create something what we call the smarter, ambitiously, the smarter city plan. And this is the report. So initially I had no idea this was what the quality of the work was going to be, but I was so impressed with the ideas that came up that I decided, with the help of a couple students, to collect all this and present it to the city. So since then, some of us from the University of Oregon, which is the place that I taught the class at the Portland White Stack building, as well as met with Josh Alpert to really kind of get a sense of where can we go forward with this whole conversation. And we believe there's quite a few interesting things to think about. First of all, this plan looks at the city of Portland through a lens of students. And you know, students are very curious, they're very socially active, but they're also essentially all broke. So that's sort of one lens. So imagine that we essentially activated other population demographics and say, what is your lens? How would you see us implement the Portland plan from your perspective? There's different demographic slices you can take, small businesses, elder people, you name it. And technology, again, makes that possible to solicit that information in a very broad space. So although this, a couple disclaimers, this is purely an ideation report. So very little deep research has gone in and around the proposals that were made by the students, who are probably the first one to admit that, being in a crunch to get this out for their final exams. But it also points out that there is really an opportunity here to really engage between the city and the creative community of Portland. This is just one sample, but I believe there's a whole variety of other sort of populations that would be eager to engage with the city of Portland. And this could be a dramatic win-win. So for the students these days, very often they do projects that end up at the end of their project as a page in their portfolio, but never see the light of day. So wouldn't it be great if all that creative energy were put into a project that actually may see the light of day in the city and really make a difference in what we do? So that's sort of one idea. So for the students, it's great because they see their work become real. They also get engaged in how real decision-making happens. They see some of the ugly realities of red tape, which I'm sure there's probably plenty of. But that's the real world, and for them it's going to be invaluable. To the city, you get essentially a lot of that creative juice flowing into the city, which may actually, in this case, be the next generation. These people care deeply about the city and where it goes. So that's sort of the setup on what we'd like to do. So this is more a conversation of possibility rather than a specific request. Mm-hmm. But what we'd like to do is following up on the conversations with Josh Alpert we had before and really have the city think on identifying opportunities that might be a regular cadence of how do we engage, for example, the University of Oregon, master students in architecture, bachelor students in product design, perhaps also students in communications, in really engaging with the city through a variety of mechanisms that could be interdisciplinary studios wrapped around real projects that the city cares about. There could be internships in the city where they actually get the city in their workings very close up, or any other different formulas that I think would make sense. So just to give you a couple highlights of what's in the plan, again, it's probably good reading if you have an afternoon and a glass of wine. But the whole idea is, what if Portland became the magnet living lab for experimentation of smart city design using information technology as well as green technologies? We always talk about exporting Portland smart about sustainability. Given that we're essentially the heart of the Silicon Forest, we can leverage and tap all the industries nearby and invite a lot of these leading edge companies to say, come use Portland as your test bed. We want to be the first one. Try it first in Portland. We will be the smartest city. We're going to be on the leading edge of figuring out how technology actually will make Portland a better place. So that's sort of the overall story. So a couple examples is students care a lot about connecting students with mentors. And again, information technology makes that find that matchmaking very, very easy. They also talked about doing flash mobs, again, organized to smartphones for example, invasive species removal. Wouldn't it be great, rather than use it for random playthings, to also use it for something that would make the city a better place, or graffiti cleanup in the neighborhood, those kind of things. Even examples of using mixed reality games, where you may use like goggles or a smartphone overlay to play games in the city that actually guide you to various historic monuments. You kind of engage with the city in a different way. Maybe it comes a tourism exercise. You rent one of those smart goggles and you find your way to the city, perhaps sponsored by local businesses that benefit in the process. The whole concept of taking sensor-based parking to an extreme and understand how that works, by linking smartphones with sensors in the curbside. Right now, I think most cities, about one-third of time driving time spent in a city is circling blocks looking for that one parking spot. So So what if your GPS in your car would just tell you there's a parking spot right there and drive you right through it? Wouldn't that be great? Again, coming to air pollution, it would, again, take a bite out of that. And then another thought was accessibility for example, people in crowdsource accessibility map of the city of Portland. Which areas are hard to access for people that are motorically disabled or in wheelchairs? Other areas that are worse than other ones. This is just a small sampling of what is possible. So again, I think there's a possibility here for really creating a close partnership that would benefit both the city as well as the University of Oregon. That's sort of my story.
Great. Great, thank you. So good morning and welcome.
Thank you.
So you have a rich menu of interesting ideas that you've put together for us here. This is really fascinating work. So tell us about each of you a little bit. Where are you in your studies? And aside from working hard to put this report together, where are you in your academic progress?
So I'm a Master's of Architecture student. I'm in my second year out of three. And currently, I mean, we put this plan together. I think it's kind of interesting that it speaks to our generation. And a lot of the suggestions, like Herman said, are kind of catered to a younger generation that's more familiar with ICT technologies. Mm. And that they also cater to a relationship that crosses boundaries between different disciplines. And that hopefully the idea is that the product design students, architecture students, and students that are in all the universities in the city could kind of integrate on different projects, and that the time that we spend on all these different projects could be put to good use. And this is kind of, in a way, a symbol of that thinking, that the work that we do in classroom can actually develop into something that's useful for the city. So I think that's kind of where we're coming from.
Hi, I'm a product design student. I'm actually about to graduate in a couple months. So, barring any kind of disaster. And, yeah, the Portland plan, I think we all were really interested in how you can kind of cross what we see now as cultural boundaries. As students, we tend to be really isolated. We kind of live our own lives. We have our own social cliques. And I think a really great benefit of doing these kinds of more integrated works would be to get students out into the world, like Herman was saying, looking for mentors, but also just having a richer connection within the community. And I think that's probably true for all groups of people. And so a lot of the stuff in the plan is socially based, because I think that, like Eli was saying, that's something that our generation tends to key into. But I think that that has a potential to really cross generations and be a kind of an easy in to a lot of these ideas. So I think we're all really excited to see how it might go into the future, even if we don't get to be directly involved.
And something that's also kind of interesting is a lot of the suggestions are application-based, so they use ideas of existing forms of software and existing apps and kind of use those ideas into ways that they can integrate pretty easily through the city. So they're kind of things to look at. And I know there are some programs that we talked about, like, you were talking about the mapping. There are programs like Waze, which use user input to, you might be familiar with it for traffic reasons, but you know, it uses user input, so anybody can input whether there's a pothole somewhere, and I know that was kind of one of the things that the city has used, the pothole identifier.
Right.
So, that, yeah, different app ideas kind of like that that are pretty low budgetarily and can be integrated pretty easily.
Great. Questions for Herman or Eli or Teresa? Thank you so much. I'm really excited by this work, and the arrival with the City Club report, I think, means that all of us have some serious homework
to
do.
Yes, clearly.
But this is really, really excellent.
Thank you so much.
Opens all kinds of possibilities. So thank you so much for doing the report and keying it to the Portland plan, as you did, and then coming here to really literally provoke us to pay careful attention to the work
accomplished,
that you've done.
Yes. So we look forward to continued dialogue with the city to take this forward and formalize some of these linkages between University of Oregon, other creatives in the place, and the city itself. Okay. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
So I guess we need a motion to accept the report.
Does anyone else want to testify?
Yes.
Sorry.
We have a sign-up sheet.
Oh, we do have other people signed up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so why don't we make room for the others, but thank you very much for presenting it this morning.
Thanks so much.
We have Joe. We have Joe Walsh, Rose Masser, Lightning, and I believe it's Alan Wigner. Sorry.
Okay. Come on up. Morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. I read the report, believe it or not. It's excellent. But that's what it is. It's a report. It's a suggestion. It's up to you guys to look at it, at least read it, because it's interesting reading. I had to use two glasses of wine when I read it. I would refer you to the disclaimer that they seem to have a problem with time and also what exactly the city was doing as they were doing the report. So there's some overlapping of different things that you have done and most things that you haven't done. And you have lots of reports. And you have lots of people coming here giving you suggestions. And in my opinion, you do very little. One of the things that stunned me this morning is I always buy the street routes because I like the organization and the articles are actually really good. The headline is Portland Population and Poverty, 189,515 and rising. But you want to close down a place that houses 75 homeless people. And you continue month after month to find them because you're pissed off at the owner. How lousy is that? Our population is in trouble. Leave them alone. Figure out a way to support them. Figure out a way to support the people out front. That I was stunned when your guest donated the five sculptures that he's going to do and auction them off and use the money for the people on the street. And we will watch you very closely to make sure you do that and you don't build another monument. Stop building and ask the people on the street what they need. This report doesn't include any homeless people. There's no statements by them. But they do go into the topic. I have one suggestion what you can do very easily. Why is there not a representative from the university sitting on this council, non-voting, but just sitting there and joining in the batter sometimes that you do up there? That would be so simple. I'm not sure, but this is one of the few city councils that doesn't have a student representative to get their input on stuff. And the last thing, Charlie, celebrate the Supreme Court decisions today because there were two. The second one was on the California Proposition 8, another 5-4 decision. I'm not celebrating that part. The one they did yesterday, they devastated affirmative action. So when we celebrate, we have to keep it in context. This is a very weird court, and it scares the hell out of me because you don't know where Kennedy's going and you don't know where Roberts is going. They keep jumping back and forth, and the rest of them are anchored. So when we celebrate the Supreme Court, we also need to say, this is scary stuff that's going on. We got four people on that Supreme Court that are lunatics, absolute lunatics. Thomas, Alito, Roberts.
Scalia,
the mafiosa.
Happy to help you out there.
Yes. Matter of fact, Scalia is Italian, and the mafia have more value than he does.
Thank you, Joe. Good morning, Lightning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. First of all, I'd like to say that the kind gentleman that decided to donate the sculptures and have them auctioned, that's a person that has given his heart today and put it out here and looked through this city and understands that truly to help the needy and the less fortunate is the best thing for the city. And I commend him for that. It's very kind. Now, moving on to the Smarter Portland plan, very impressive, very creative,